je suis tracteur, je suis tourment, j'ai pas le moral, j'ai pas d'argent, j'ai pas de chance, j'ai pas d'amis. Bienvenue to another podcast, Pell Droids. My name is Russell, and big week this week. We've got our big quiz on Friday night. In our last podcast, I spoke with Tim Hartley, one of the founding trustees of the Gold Cymru charity, so that's available. And so it's our second podcast in a week, and this time I have the very, very great pleasure of actor, writer, producer, musician, Mirtha boy, Johnny Owen. How are you, sir?
Very good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I've had the afternoon off looking after my lad who's off school. So it's quite a lazy sort of afternoon, if I'm honest. But I could get used to this. Happy St. David's Day to you.
Happy St. David's Day to you as well.
And I'm really grateful you're taking the time out, because I imagine you're pretty busy doing this, a lot of this sort of media and press and promotional stuff at the minute with the film.
Yeah, it's been really full on. I mean, we expected a bit of interest in it, but it's UK-wide, which has been amazing.
Yeah, oh yeah, of course. And it's Wednesday today. Was it Monday night, London?
Yeah, a big premiere on Monday night, which all the team attended, except for Gareth, obviously, who was playing on the Sunday night in Madrid. It was kind of a bittersweet thing, really, when he came back. I was hoping he'd sort of be out another week or two, because he was going to make the premiere. The Welsh fan in me was glad, really, that he was able to play and was coming back and is, you know, going to return to form with the looks pretty quickly.
Yeah. Damn you physios and sports scientists in Madrid.
Yeah, damn you, Bale, you superhuman person, you.
Yeah. Finally, we found a fault in him.
Yes.
I'm off to see it tonight in Cineworld. Gaz and Dan off the podcast are coming along as well. I know Leon out in Innsbruck is insanely jealous, so yeah. I'm going to just kind of, you know, twist the knife a little bit deeper by mentioning that.
This is on fault for living in Innsbruck.
Well, exactly. And if Austria had been any good in the Euros, he could have gone to the Austrian equivalent.
Exactly.
I don't know what date Don't Take Me Home is in German, but he could have gone to that one. We're going, as I said, tonight. I'm sure it's more than a coincidence that it's coming to Wales on St. David's Day. Then gets cinematic release, you know, around and about the country then from Friday, am I right?
That's right, yeah, this weekend. It's been picked up by a load of cinemas. We were expecting maybe we'd have a bit of interest in Wales, certainly today. That was the idea to get it out, because originally, you know, when I was first asked about the film, they were going to make it for TV, BT Sports. But a big distributor got involved, loved it, said we think this could work as a cinematic release. Certainly in Wales, for a night on St. David's Day, I thought fantastic. But what's happened is that the demand has meant that it's opening up on the weekend, and I think it's been kept in some cinemas for a week now.
Really? Oh, that's brilliant. That's great. I can imagine I'll be probably buying it when it comes out on DVD and the commemorative tea towels and ironing board covers and aprons and all the other promotional gear that might come out with it. I mean, before we talk about the film, though, I mean, I've mentioned, you know, actor, writer, producer. What else do people need to know about you?
Well, I'm from Mirtha. I grew up as a football fan. It was a football town, really, Mirtha, famously, historically. My father, passed on to me this great love of the Welsh national football team from a young age. So I can actually remember not qualifying in 78, the trauma of that. I was about 7 years of age, and apparently I cried, right? And I said, there can't be a God. That's probably what I said when Joe Shorten cheated us. Became quite a famous family story, but, you know, I was prone, obviously, to drama, even that But then I went to my first game. I watched Wales against England in the old home championships. My grandfather and my father took me down, and Trevor Francis scored, beat us 1-0. That was the Mike England era. And I met Trevor since. I made a film called I Believe in Miracles about the great Nottingham Forest team that went two European Cups. So I got to know Trevor really well. And I told him that. And he remembers the goal very well. He also remembers Wales being a very strong side.
Mm.
And the home internationals being a really strong competition. He said that we used to do much better on the world stage when we had those games at the end of the season. They were quite, you know, well fought out. But they fell by the wayside. And then, really, like a lot of lads, the Yorath era was my kind of era when I started going on my own and travelling across Europe. And those two campaigns where we nearly qualified for 92 Euros and then the 94 World Cup,
yeah,
played terrifically, beat Germany at home famously, and obviously pushed Romania all the way. I remember that era very, very well. We had a great side then. I think the Welsh football team, we all spoke about it, all the karmic energy of the universe came back to us this summer. We were paid back, I think, for all the misery that we'd endured over the decades, and it was just a glorious summer. It really was one of the best summers, if not the best summer of my life.
and I'm sure you're not alone in that. I mean, in terms of that sort of 78 kind of near miss, one of many, that would be among, or if not your earliest memory then? Because we asked that when we have kind of guests.
It was my earliest memory was not qualifying. They played the match in 77, if I remember.
Sorry, yeah, yeah.
And we didn't qualify, and that's when I cried. I was at the game where in 85 and Jock Steen passed away, sadly. I was there that night, and that was a miserable night all around. Because we had a very good side.
Yeah, yeah.
Mickey Thomas, Ian Rush, Mark Hughes, Joey Jones, some real world-class players in that team. I was quite sad that we didn't qualify. And then the Orith era was when we had the next great side. It was quite interesting. My dad said to me, the night I got in from the Romania game, again, another tragic night, a gentleman from Earth was killed that night by a flare, infamously. And I got in, and they sacked the Orith within the week, I think. It might have even been 2 or 3 days later. And I can remember my father saying, that'll knock Welsh football back 10 years. Them sacking Orith, and he was absolutely bang on. It took almost 10 years for us to sort of get back to where we were at that time. It just knocked us sideways, you know. And there's a bit in the film, actually, where Oisin and Robert says there were many in Wales that thought we'd never qualify for a major tournament. And I was one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll hold my hands up and say, I didn't think we'd make it, Russ, you know. So this tournament, when the Euros 24 started, and that was such an important game up in Andorra, such an important game, that win was essential, really, because I can remember it when it was 1-1. And I was staying that weekend with Mrs. in the cottage. I wasn't out there. And I can remember saying to her, if we don't win this, I think that could be the end of Coleman. This could be the end of it. And it's amazing how many small margins there are in football. You know, we were just talking before we started, how many things I've noticed making this film. And the one thing you notice, and even though there's more resonance now, just a few years later, is the tiny margins in football. And that was one of them. You know, to get that first win up in Andorra was massive for us.
But of course, I mean, even, you know, there were people calling for his head even after that. You know, even though we've sort of scraped the win, I mean, you know, Bale has got us out of it, but even then, you know, people were calling for Coleman's head.
He's matured into the job, isn't he? I mean, there's a bit in the film where a lot of people said his first press conference, they said, you know, you don't want to be here today, do you? And he goes, no, I'm the last person that wants to be here. Imagine taking a job in them circumstances. There was a bit of a gasp in the crowd, and it was one of the things I put in there. It was only 7.5 weeks after the death of Gary Speed, and he took that job.
So,
that's how tiny the time was. You think it was like he had 6 months or a year to come in. 7.5 weeks and he was doing that job.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was sort of saying that, you know, the chair was, I didn't want to sit in his chair in the office. He said he was one of my best friends. He said, it's awful when your friend passes, but imagine him doing his job. And it took the team a long time to get over it. And, you know, I've been saying in interviews in London this week with TalkSport and Five Live, but forget, you know, some of those players were teenagers.
Yeah.
They were kids, you know, when Gary Speed passed. The young men, early 20s, some one or two of them, Aaron Ramsey was our youngest ever captain. It really shook them, you know, shook the nation, it shook them, and, you know, all credit to them, the way they've come back. But people need to remember, really, what they went through in those sort of 18 months after the passing of Gary.
You know, I don't know how true this is, but I heard that when Speed got the job, because I think, you know, the FAW sort of had asked him, he hadn't necessarily kind of thrown his hat in the ring first off. Coleman was one of the first people, if not the first people that he rang. And apparently sort of joked down the phone, sort of saying, guess where I am, Chris? He said, where? I'm sitting in your chair. Because Coleman was in the running.
Yeah.
And I don't think necessarily people realise quite how close they were, but I think they roomed as kids together. They played
massive
a lot.
We talk about it in the film.
Teenagers,
he said, I can remember the first time I met him, and he had blue boots on. This is how long ago it was. And he said, boy, you could play. So there was this schoolboy trial they had. They all went up from Swansea, I think they were 12 or 13. And everybody was talking with this kid from Hawaii with blue boots. And he said, it was Gary Speed. And he said, we hit it off straight away. And they were friends right through the ages, you know, like they roomed together. You know, just about best friends. And so, you know, it has an incredible resonance, him taking that job. Almost, I think, deeper than we all realise. I think when English people watch it, I mean, my great mate Shane Meadows and my Mrs. Vicky McClure, when they watched it, they were like, it really hits us, you know, what happened there. But with us, because we're such a small nation, it kind of happened so quickly. And we were almost in a daze, I thought, you know, the Welsh people. We kind of didn't quite, we took so long to absorb it. And now with a bit of hindsight, it's almost Shakespearean, really, what happened. It's so poignant, you know, that, you know, his best friend had had the job and then he was doing the job within a few weeks.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. So, as I said, I've not seen the film. I cannot wait to go and see it tonight. So it's not just about the Euros. It's not like the film starts kind of rocking up in Bordeaux or rocking up or in Zenica when we've qualified.
I had to talk about Gary. I think it was important I did that. I had to do it. I had to think long and hard about how I was going to do it and how sensitively I had to be. And I showed it to his family on Monday night. His father was there and his son. And they said to me that it was beautifully done for them, and I wanted to show how important he was to us in Wales, how well thought of he was, and what a great player, potentially what a great manager. You know, he was on the cusp of becoming, and so I wanted to do that because it had so much. It's so important to the story because when the players talk about how easy it was for them to get over the England loss, they put it in the context that we've been through much more difficult times than that, you know. So, you know, it wasn't the end of the world that we lost to England. We were still in the competition. We were able to put it behind us and then come out against Russia and play brilliantly. And I can vividly remember Martin Keown on TalkSport saying, just before the Russia game, I'm really worried about Wales now because to concede a goal against your bitterest rivals in the 94th minute, I think Russia could steamroller Wales because Russia had good results against England, you know. And we came out and we smashed Russia to bits. So that's an important part of the story to me, is how psychologically strong they could be, those boys, because they had to be, because they'd been through much more difficult situations than that.
Mm. No, absolutely. We sat down with a guy, Nick Stradlin, he does the Movies Wales YouTube site and Twitch and things, and he did his own sort of documentary. It was very, very raw, and you know, by his own admission, was a lot of fun. And what's funny in that is the number of people who say, but it doesn't get repetitive or boring or trite in any way. The number of people who sort of said, "This is putting us on the map."
Yeah, it is.
And exactly. But both not as not just as a nation, but as kind of like as people and as fans that can behave and have a good time and be hospitable. And I think for me, some of those sort of memories I think will last probably longer than things that happened on the pitch.
Yeah. I was talking to Ellis James about it. He was a great lad, a good friend of mine. And we've got our own culture. There's a very specific Welsh football fan culture that's developed. Now, there is a culture among certain countries of wearing wigs and getting drunk and behaving a certain way, which is fine, you know, and that's what they do. And then there's obviously the other spectrum, which is like, you know, you're going to strip to the half, sing songs about German bombers, and, you know, and just be generally aggressive, you know what I mean? And that's another culture. And then beautifully in the middle has developed this culture of like bucket hats and Adidas trainers and behaving a certain way. And that's what there's a great t-shirt, isn't it, that's been developed, which has got Independent Footballing Nation on it about us. And we are an independent footballing nation off the pitch as much as on the pitch. There is a very specific, like I said, culture around watching Wales now, and it's absolutely terrific. And in France, it was there in all its glory. I had so many mates from England who came out to meet me there, who just said they had the best time because Welsh football fans, they can talk about the game brilliantly. They're pretty well travelled. We were there. We embraced being in France. You know, we were so happy to be there. The team was playing great, and that's something that's very specific to us. And I don't think I was ever more proud of being Welsh than I was in France this summer. You know, just walking on the street in Wales tops and people beeping to you and shouting "Pay the Gal."
Everybody,
we became everybody's second team, and that was as much about what we were doing off the pitch as on the pitch. You know, and the players knew that. They talk about that in the film. They were very aware that the fans were sort of like winning the competition amongst the supporters, you know, as much as they were doing as well on the pitch. And it's quite beautiful the way that, you know, what could have been a cheesy marketing campaign, you know, Together Stronger, actually became the definitive sort of statement about the whole tournament. And I said this at the time, the FAW deserved a lot of credit for the way they set that up, you know, and they kind of, you know, there were a lot of the journalists who were mate of mine and were saying that the access to the Welsh players was much more relaxed than it was to the English players, you know, and that set a better tone straight away, not by accident. And it all beautifully sort of coalesced into this summer. It all came together on the pitch, off the pitch, bang, that was the tournament. And then, you know, by the end, we had become the smallest country in the history of the game to get to a semi-final of a major tournament. Perfect.
Still sounds sort of ridiculous though, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. He says, great line of the film. He says, the only thing that was missing was the trophy. Yeah. The only thing missing this summer. In the 49th game of a 51-game tournament, Wales were playing. If somebody had told us that 5 years ago, let alone 10 years ago, we would have laughed. It would be nonsense. But, you know, that's it. That's the situation that we were in. You know, you said to me before we came on air about, you know, what's even more pertinent now, just, you know, almost a year later or just a few months later. And straight away, there's things like Aaron Ramsey and Gareth Bale, for argument's sake, are actually in their prime. They were in their prime this summer. They're just gone past their mid-20s. So, you know, they're experienced. They're used to the big stage. They're at the physical height of their powers. You know, so all the things, you know. We've got one of the best players in the world. Well, Sid Lowe, the great Spanish journalist who works for Guardian, I was in Bilbao, and he said to me, "You've got the best player in the world at the moment." This was last March. And he said to me, I said, "What, Bale?" And he went, "Yeah." He said, "He's better than, form-wise, he's better than Messi and Ronaldo at the moment." He said, "If you ask any Spanish football fan or Spanish football writer, they'll tell you the best player in Spain at the moment in La Liga is Gareth Bale. Do you remember he had the fantastic in the Champions League final?
Yeah.
I kind of said to me, he said to me, I think you'll do well in these European championships because just, you know, because Bale is so good at the moment. And I can remember thinking, oh, this is all right. You know, that would be very Welsh about it, going, you think so? And, and then, of course, what happened was, as we all know, Aaron Ramsey had a stunning tournament. So, you know,
yeah.
Gareth Bale delivered the goals and pulled players into different, you know, positions because of who he was and his prowess on the pitch. I mean, he kicks the goal, he's practically froze the pair of them when he smashed the ball. But Aaron Ramsey had a sensational tournament, as we all know, you know, as did Joe Allen, as did Ben Davies, Ashley Wood. But I thought Aaron was terrific pretty much in every game, and we missed him really badly in that semi-final. We missed him really badly.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I've got a theory, and it's not necessarily a particularly sort of popular, but I actually think that Bale, I think he kind of sort of faded as the tournament went on. And that sounds more critical and harsher than I intend it, because I just think others stepped up even more so. They kind of grew in confidence and stature. And I think it was almost a sort of a realisation maybe on his part. And I know that there's a terrific camaraderie and friendship amongst a lot of them. Because again, you know, they've come through the system together in the same way that, you know, Speed and Coleman did in their day. Almost perhaps a recognition. So say, look, these guys are really kind of growing in stature. They're taking the game to the opposition, and he doesn't have to try to win it himself. He doesn't have to keep putting in these superhuman efforts, because the tournament comes up at the end of a long season. And I can remember we doing a couple of these before the tournament started and worried about whether people like Allen and Rams, who've had their injury problems, could they last a number of games like this, high intensity, in a short period of time? Because we've never had a number of games like this in a short period of time.
No, I think it's the first time in our history we've played that many games. Well, since 58, certainly.
Exactly.
But I think the thing was that he produced world-class moments for us. I think it's fair to say he had about two or three, really, didn't he, in the first few games? The free kicks and the goal against Russia. And my mate said to me, it was almost like we used them up, really, by the Portugal game. And Ronaldo hadn't had a world-class moment, and did with that header, with, I think, eight foot in the air or something. But what's really interesting for me is, because obviously I've got so much depth doing the film, I've had the ISO cameras, the isolated cameras on Bale, and it's remarkable what he does in a game. I mean, he's really interesting when he hasn't got the ball, because he constantly wants it. He really wants the ball all the time. He's brave in that sense. He's like, always going, give it here. When he gets it, what's really interesting about him is he's only got one thing on his mind, and that's to either score, or, you know, to shoot, to score, or to go past somebody. It's a remarkable thing to watch. There's so few footballers like that. We've all become a bit obsessed with Barcelona and tiki-taka football and all that. But Bale's really interesting, because you can't buy that in football. It's like somebody that's just got one thing on their mind. He's just gonna have a go at you. He's just gonna go turning towards you, and it's phenomenal to watch. I think that he's Welsh and he's got that ability, because great John Robertson, one of the miracle men, two European Cup winners, he said to me, the reason why Gareth Bale is so important, because I was obviously doing the classical, I thought Aaron Ramsey was our best player in this tournament. He went, well, he was brilliant. He said, but the reason why Bale is your best player, let me tell you, is he scores goals. And he said, that's the most important thing in football, is sticking the ball in the back of the net. And when he explained that, I kind of went, yeah, that's a good point. I never thought of that. He says, so when you got that lad, he said, you know, against the Northern Ireland game, that was something I noticed. He scored that goal, really, because he stuck the ball in. And Robson Carter was flying in. The Irish defender, bless him, had to come across because the ball in was so good. That it was, and that was Bale again. And I didn't realise that. A bit like when I watched the game live, I thought to myself, oh, I didn't do. But when I watched it back, well, the defining moment of that game in the second round of a world class tournament, he was the most important moment in that league. Gareth Bale chucked the ball in. And only a tiny amount of football teams and players have that ability. So we've always got a chance with him in the team, and especially with him and Aaron in the team. Once you've got two world class players on any side, it's my theory, it's really hard to defend against us, because we know that we've done this brilliant thing. We've got the three at the back, we're going to five, very difficult to play against. Joe can pick the ball up just in front of them, like almost like an old fashioned sweeper. He's like Baresi sometimes, when he can pick a ball. He's got one thing on his mind, Joe Allen, he's going to turn and go at you. You've got Ramsey in the middle of the pitch there. Got Joe Ledley just inside, who's a great destructive player as well. I've got a sweet left foot. But Gareth Bale then up front. So we've got a terrific. And what John Robson said to me was, Martin O'Neill's assistant, he said, when you've got two world class players playing, it's really difficult. Because if you play a pressing game, one of them can thread through you. And if you sit back, they'll just hammer the ball at you all the time. And he said, that's what Wales had this tournament. He said, you were the one team that had two world class players, in my opinion. That's why you beat Belgium. And when he explained it, I was like, I could listen to this all day. Somebody talking about Wales beat in, you know, they call Belgium the billion-dollar team. They've used this expression.
Yeah.
Over there, they call them, apparently they're the first international football team that will be worth £1 billion, apparently, and combined all their transfer fees. And people forget this, you know, over here, it's in the film. Belgium with the tournament favourites for the quarterfinals. Yeah. The favourites to win the Euro 26 championship by the quarterfinals was Belgium. It was considered the easiest part of the draw. They had all these amazing players like Hazard, De Bruyne, and we stuffed them. We beat them 3-1.
We got a little bit lucky in that game on occasions, although, you know, which is not to say that we didn't deserve to win, but they could not wait to get off that pitch, those Belgians. They'd kind of given up on about 83 minutes. You just saw them kind of go, this isn't going to happen for us, and we cannot wait to get off that pitch.
Absolutely,
and down,
right.
And down the tunnel.
You know what? I've got it in the film. Everybody goes, it's a really good decision. I don't want to give too much away, but I've got their first goal as a slow-mo, and I've intercut the slow-mo before it even hits the net, them cheering, the fans, the manager, the players, because they thought that was it. And they had a fair point, because, you know, I was speaking to some Belgian lads after that. They were great fans, Belgians. They were really magnanimous with them, and they were great with us. But one of them said to me, when we were 1-0 up, we thought, that's it, now you've got to come at us, and we'll exploit that space. Because, you know, the players they got, you know, the pace they've got, they got everything, Belgium. And he said, it was almost like they thought they'd won there. They did everything they should have early, which is a bit more like what England did against Iceland. They thought, if England had an early goal against Iceland, then that's it, it's game over, because they can settle down. But almost getting the early goal, weirdly, made Wales and Iceland go, well, we may as well have a crack now.
We may as well have
a real crack. And it's interesting, the Wales players all say, we could feel there was a goal coming. We could feel there was a goal coming. And then the second half, they went, we kind of almost knew we were going to score again. And I think a lot to do with that, as we all know, is we played them twice in the warm-ups, and then we'd drawn with them away in the previous qualifiers. So we had this feeling that Belgium weren't that much better than us, were they? We could match them, certainly, you know, and we beat them, obviously, in the CCS. But on a major tournament, it was a bit like, you know, a lot of people thought they were going to wipe the floor with us, I think, you know. But, you know, that was just some night that was in league, wasn't it?
Oh, no, it's phenomenal. And give me goosebumps. I'm just trying to... Remember it, and as I said, you know, I can't wait to go and see it. I'm gonna have a couple of jars before, which was again, watching the film in the spirit of how we watch the games.
Yeah,
although it is a school night, so it won't be exactly the same as last summer. I mean, another kind of big kind of aspect of it, and again, you talked about kind of like Welsh sort of football fan culture, and it was amazing how you know, there was a Super Furry Animals concert in Toulouse during it, and is that link between football and music, and the soundtrack is, by all accounts, and I've seen the list of some of the bands, is really, really impressive, and I'm almost as much looking forward to hearing some of that as watching the film. So what's the role that the music plays in the soundtrack in this?
Well, obviously soundtrack is really important to me. I used to be in a band when I was a kid, and I really think that, you know, people can get a feel of something if you get the right music set to it. I thought long and hard about stuff, and there was a song that I wanted by a really famous 60s French star called Jacques Dutronc, which I used in the trailer that everybody went mad for, and it's called L'Irresponsable. And I always loved this song, and it's kind of like energetic and sort of full of passion and, you know, vitality, and I thought that summed up us a little bit, what we were like out there, you know. It's in French, and it sounds like somebody just having the best time of their life. But I was told that he was really eccentric, and I was told that it was very difficult for him to agree to let his songs go anymore. So I wrote this long email, I think, get it translated, and lives in Corsica, and explained about what we'd, you know, what we'd been through and how important it was for us. What a great summer. And he came back with a yes, you know, or a we. He said, you know, we can have the song. So I was really chuffed for that, because I thought to myself, that's the perfect song for this film. And then I'm a big fan of a guy called Richard Hawley, who's from Sheffield, but I found out he had a Welsh wife.
Oh, didn't you know?
And then I found out he had Welsh children. I thought, oh, beautiful. I thought myself, he's got a Welsh wife, there's no way they wouldn't be supporting Wales this summer. They'd have to be supporting Wales. So I wrote to them, and yeah, they were like, they were all really into Wales this summer. The kids already consider themselves half Welsh, so perfect. So I had some of his songs as well. Obviously, I wanted the Super Furry Animals. I think the Super Furry Animals are, of all our great bands, and I love the Manix, but I think the Super Furries are the ultimate Welsh football fans. They remind me of Welsh fans, you know, the way they dress, the way they look, their attitude, they're great. And I wanted a few of their songs in there, and I seen Griff out there in Toulouse, so I wanted some of their stuff in there. So I got them, I got some Small Faces stuff in there as well. I'm sort of an old mod, as people know, so I really wanted some of their stuff in there. So it was a great soundtrack, and I was really, you know, I found this Welsh band called Yucatan.
Yeah,
I sound a bit like a Welsh version of Sigur Rós, almost, you know, beautiful, but a little bit more edgy, I think. And I used a lot of their stuff because it was just perfect for the the atmosphere of the film, especially the top half, which deals with, you know, Gary's passing and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm really pleased with the soundtrack. And straight away on Monday, people were asking me, you know, is it going to come out and all the rest of it. So there may be plans for it. I mean, the Welsh FA have been brilliant with this film. They're already talking about, you know, posters and things because people have requested them and some merch and stuff. They did a terrific poster for it, and they let me do the film. When they offered me the film, they said to me, "We want you to do the film you want to do." They didn't interfere in any way, which I thought was fantastic of them. You know, really took, you know, a lot of courage. And the first time the players and the Welsh FA seen it was at the premiere in London. So you've got to give a lot of credit to them.
Really. Okay, yeah. Fair play. Well, I mean, you touched on it at the start and how Terry Orris' reign came to an end. And let's be perfectly honest, most of us, if we followed Wales for any length of time, have stuck the boot in on the FAW on any number of occasions, on any number of issues as well.
Yeah. But
they've been pitch perfect this last few years, to be fair to them, on pretty much everything.
I think there's a lot to do with, there's a few people there. I mean, everybody knows Mark Evans, don't they? Big player in the Welsh FA and been watching football since the late 80s, so knows what I call terrorist culture, but fan culture, you know, knows it inside out. He's a big player there now, so he gets it. Ian Davis there was in charge of the commercial arm, a cool guy, you know, gets it. And there's not that many of them, you know. It's great because it's a small organisation. It's not the English FA. We've got to go through, you know, layers of bureaucracy, hugely powerful. The Welsh FA is much smaller, and it's great because it's much easier to get decisions made, and it's much more dynamic. And I think they get it. They get the Welsh football fan is as important as the player. They really do understand that. You hear them, they talk about ticket pricing, they talk about, you know, getting people out there, you know, doing the merch deals they've done with Spirit of 58, which is a terrific label, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it's like you said, on the money again. So there's, earlier on, everything seems to have sort of coordinated quite beautifully for Welsh football. And I think it's going to last decades. I genuinely feel now that people are going to watch Wales in massive numbers for a decade or two, because you know, if you go away with Wales now, you're going to have a great time.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened in France. You know, I remember reading, they were going, God, 8,000 tickets gone for Bordeaux, and they expected 10,000 to 15,000 to travel, great numbers. And conservative estimates were 30,000 landed on Bordeaux.
Yeah.
And everybody was going, well, this is double what we expected. And, you know, and then by the time it got to Toulouse and Paris, there was 50,000 Welshmen knocking around France. They were like 80,000 were travelling up there at one point. I mean, these were phenomenal numbers.
Yeah.
These are some of the biggest, you know, this is the biggest support in Europe. This is up with the Germanys and England, and that was Wales. And nobody could have predicted that. Nobody could have predicted that. So, you know, I think what's happened in France has changed the landscape of Wales, sporting landscape of Wales, forever, because look at Ireland, the tickets went in a breath. And thousands are going to travel out there. Do you know what I mean? And that's only going to continue. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I don't think this is going to be a tough qualifying tournament for the World Cup. But, you know, what we've got on the back of this is the momentum of the next 2 decades. Because the kids are going to want this all the time now. Because my mate said his boy, who was only 7, who went, thinks this is norm for Wales.
Yeah.
Then we go to France and we beat, you know, world-class teams and we travel over. Good. Let it be the norm.
Absolutely.
Should be qualifying. We should be there, you know?
And I think there's a sort of almost like a serendipity, if you like, that we've got Ireland coming up, and it is a defining game in this campaign because, you know, I think we do need to win. A draw, you know, we can still maybe, you know, fight it out for the playoff, but I think we need to win. And I think, for me, Ireland should be our benchmark because they finally got to a tournament in 88.
Yeah,
I agree. And I worked out in the 14 tournaments since, they've either qualified or got to the playoffs and missed out on 9 occasions.
So
you're looking at a kind of like a 2 in 3 success rate in terms of getting to the playoffs, and in terms of maybe similar resources, size, you know, competing with other games, both in terms of participants and profile and sponsorship and media coverage. I think they're a benchmark, and we may not kind of admit that, but I think they are, and I think actually we should start looking to compare ourselves with them more than certainly that lot over the border. And maybe other countries. I hear this kind of Iceland, and I think it's actually the Republic.
I agree, and I think as well. What's really interesting is they're a real confident bunch. I know loads of Irish lads who think they're going to beat us. You know what I mean? It's really interesting, which I quite like actually. I quite like us being the underdog again a little bit because we're a big scalp now. We're a big scalp, certainly from Moldova and Georgia and even Serbia. They all want a piece of us now, but the Irish. I think the one real sort of advantage we got, talking to the players about it, is they really think they're going to beat us. They really think they're going to beat us as well. And that's when we can be at our best, and we can go there, and like you said, let's try and get a result. Let's try and have a go. let's not go there and say, oh, you know, a point will do it, because, you know, that's probably not going to be good enough. Let's just go over there. Let's try and beat them. Especially Bale and Ramsey are back, you know. Let's go over there. Let's try and get 3 points, because I would rock that group then, because they're the top of the group, you know, and it's all to play for them.
I think there's a similarity with the last campaign, because if you remember, Israel had got off to a flyer. And they were a little bit cocky, and they thought, hang on, we can do you. Because for them, if you remember, they had a double header. They had us first and then Belgium. Because the Belgium game, I think, had been rearranged because there'd been some problems in Israel.
Yeah.
And I remember speaking to Raphael Geller, the journalist out there, and he sort of said how, we think we can kind of sort you out and then see what we can get out of Belgium. And I remember thinking, okay, fine, interesting.
Yeah.
And we just blew them away. I think there's a parallel there. And, 3-0 would be amazing, but I'll take 1-0 in the 90th minute, let's be honest. a repeat of the Northern Ireland game in France. So,
yes,
I'm really grateful for your time. I know you've got a busy schedule with the film. Yeah. Wish you the best of luck with it.
Thank you very much.
You mentioned the film about Forest, I Believe in Miracles. And again, it's also sort of serendipitous. I watched that on a coach with a load of Wrexham fans of various ages while we were out there, and really enjoyed that film. And what was great was the number of conversations that it generated, and kind of memories and nostalgia, because you had some guys in their sort of 60s who remembered that really, really well. And obviously Wrexham were having a cracking time in the mid to late 70s as well.
Yeah.
And they remember sort of Clough and things like that. And people were bonding around that. And I think it was just that... Again, that fan culture, that terrace culture. So if it's half as good as that, then I think we're in for a treat later tonight.
Oh, thank you, mate. Thank you. I really enjoy it. I mean, I have a few pints going, and hopefully we can relive a bit of France again, because it was just some summer, wasn't it?
Yeah. And we've managed not to give any spoilers away, if any people don't know how it ends.
Yeah, and the only thing I'm sad is that, sadly, we don't win the tournament, unfortunately. Sorry to let you down.
And
Mike said me watching the day, said that's the first time I watched the Portugal game. He said that was the first time I was able to watch little bits of it. I understand.
I'm still annoyed that we didn't wear red. The world sees us in two-tone grey.
I know.
Johnny, I'm really grateful. Enjoy the rest of your St. David's Day.
Thanks,
and all the best. Take care.